Welcome to the Buddha Sasana Podcast. This talk was given by Bhikkhu Chintita in Austin, Texas.
You're going to become a what? You're going to do everything on purpose that everyone else is trying hard to avoid, like discipline, commitments, sitting on the floor, noble silence, wearing a bed sheet in public, and waking up before dawn? All this so that you can renounce everything everyone else thinks makes life worth living, like entertainment, parties, lavish food, singing and dancing, wine, women, and song, fast cars and fast women, gossip, strong opinions, being right, self-promotion, self-adornment, revenge, late nights, a vacation house in Belize, tequila sunrises on the beach with an awesome woman, spiffy clothes and hair? What are you thinking? These were questions of my own mind raised anew for the umpteenth time in many years, even though they had long been answered. You see, it replied to itself, we are born into a looking glass world, the looking glass in which virtually everyone lives is a preposterous world of misconception. Left is right and right is left. Forward is backward, outside is inside. What is alluring is generally too hot to handle. Things are not really as they seem in the looking glass world. A monk or a nun is someone who is willing to break the bonds of attachment, to step boldly out through the looking glass to inhabit, as a matter of vow, bodily, verbally, and mentally, the world as it actually is. As perplexing as this sounds, the no-frills life on the less inhabited side of the looking glass is one of great ease and fulfillment. No longer trampled underfoot by the vicissitudes of soap operatic existence, the flower of awakening naturally thrives there. Although it's easy to ordain, it's difficult to remain in robes if one cannot step through the looking glass. To step through the looking glass requires certain qualities of character, seclusion, discipline, reflection, and resolve. Seclusion is to step back, to disengage from the soap opera of life. Discipline is needed not to stray from what is proper to the practice. Reflection is a necessary basis for developing an unbiased awareness of things as they are. Resolve is to give form and direction to an otherwise amorphous and wishy-washy life. Each is necessary to step out through the looking glass. Immediately after my ordination, one of the Burmese monks would ask me what felt different. I would reply, "I know what I am." He would nod knowingly and be pleased with my answer. But after thinking about it, I would realize that my answer would not quite have gotten to the heart of it. The holy land of Sagaing Hills, which consists almost entirely of monasteries, was a happening place in March of 2009. I was scheduled to ordain on Sidigu Siero's birthday, an annual occasion of much circumstance and pomp. Eshin Dr. Nyanissara, known as Sidigu Siero, which means teacher of the moon, now in his mid-70s, was enormously renowned, particularly for his preaching and his huge social welfare projects. Each year, he invited 1,000 monks and 1,000 nuns to participate, along with a gauntlet of many hundreds of laypeople snaking around the monastery grounds who would make offerings to the monastics as they passed by. Offered were soap, toothpaste, toothbrushes, towels, blankets, incense, candles, disposable lighters, more soap, containers of fruit drinks, tamarind candy, notepads, pencils, pens, small books, calendars, envelopes, more soap, flashlights, money in envelopes, and soap. Each monk or nun was assigned a kapiya, a Pali word, usually a young man who would hold a big plastic bag into which the monastic hand would drop items as they were offered. The first monks in line would receive more substantial gifts until these ran out. For instance, battery-operated wall clocks with Sita Gusiero's picture on the face went to perhaps the first 100 monks. Of course, Sita Gusiero himself, a particularly fertile field of merit, would attract a particularly enthusiastic flood of donations as he snaked through the line of donors. The following year, when I would also participate, he would engage the services of the American acting ambassador to Myanmar and of the Pakistani ambassador, whom he would have invited to his birthday celebration to act as dual kapiyas, to collect his offerings in plastic bags. He is unnervingly charismatic for a monk. Theravada or Mahayana ordination happens in two stages. One, novice ordination. Two, higher ordination. Most typically, novice ordination is undertaken by youngsters under the age of 20 and full ordination at the age of 20. However, for oldsters already over the age of 20, like me, for instance, both can happen in quick succession. Novice ordination involves shaving the head, donning the robes, and taking the refuges and 10 precepts. It requires only one monk to perform. It is a private ceremony, not requiring approval of a sangha, a quorum of monks. In my case, I was a novice for one day. Ashin Aryadhamma, abbot of the Sirigu Buddhist Vihara in Austin, Texas, with whom I had traveled to Myanmar, gave the precepts. Another monk, Ashin Lokanatta, who lived in Jamaica, assisted, and a few lay people, Burmese and American, were present. We went outside to a large community well where I got my hair wet and let Ashin Lokanatta shave my head. I had been shaving my head for years since ordaining in the Zen tradition, but I had then let my hair, or what was left of it, grow for about 3 weeks for just this occasion. The procedure attracted many curious Burmese of all ages who, although familiar with its form, were not so with the race of the candidate for ordination. Back inside, Ashin Lokanatta helped me put on the lower and upper robes in a side room after Ashin Aryadhamma had ceremonially offered them to me. These had been donated to me, as had each of the 8 requisites necessary for my full ordination the next day. In the main room, the refuges and precepts were administered in Pali. Tradition requires that this be pronounced precisely, since Pali is respected in Theravada as the language of the Buddha. The Burmese have their unique way of pronouncing Pali, so we followed what is considered internationally to have been the correct pronunciation, after repeating the lines a couple of times in the hopes that I would get it right at least once. Ashin Aryadhamma had me repeat the Burmese pronunciation, just in case the Burmese had been right all along. After novice ordination, we reported to Sita Gusiero, who would be my preceptor the next day, me sporting my new burgundy outfit, just like Ashin Lokanatta's and Ashin Aryadhamma's, as well as Siero's. After I had made the proper vows, the famous monk spoke. "I think of name for you. I'll give you a little name. It's my experience. If someone has little name, they do great things, big name, little things." How long you think about ordaining as Theravada monk? I answered, for about 4 years. I had been a Zen priest in a Japanese tradition for longer than that, which I had with time come to regard as a kind of bardo state of neither monk nor layman, though I had tried increasingly to live according to monk standards, and had considered ever more making it official. 4 years ago was as good an estimate as any of when I seriously began to think about ordaining in a Vinaya tradition. The Vinaya is the extensive monastic code established by the Buddha, known throughout Buddhist Asia, but all but forgotten in Japan. 4 years, long time, then he pondered and finally concluded. Sendita, it means good thinker. In international Pali, pronounced chintita. For the rest of the day, I felt like Lawrence of Arabia testing out my new clothing, except that mine was much more primitive and did not come with a dagger. In fact, I felt like I was wearing a beach blanket in public, which might conceivably happen if you happen to be at the beach and, say, an octopus gets ink on your regular clothes, and you furthermore have also irrevocably promised to stop at the deli on the way home. Except that in my case, I would have to dress like this for the whole day, no matter where I went, every day, forever. Apparently, such fasteners as buttons, straps, zippers and Velcro just didn't exist at the time of the Buddha, so the outfit stays on more or less by willpower, like a beach blanket would. In the evening, a Burmese family came to visit and greeted me with 3 full prostrations each, much as I had earlier given to Sidigu Siero. It occurred to me what it must feel like to be a Buddha statue, just clay, but the unaccountable symbolic recipient of great reverence that had been earned by someone else. So why, again, did I want to become a monk? First, so that my life would not be a problem for myself or for the many others whom my misguided actions would otherwise harm. Second, so that I could bring the fruits of life and practice to my people. America is spiritually crippled. Its people, by and large, lack any semblance of inner fortitude. They live desperately, often in the midst of wealth and splendor, encountering the world with fear, all the while seeking in vain any bit of personal advantage that might make it all right. I believe Buddhism will become a positive force in America's future, as it has in my present. But history shows Buddhism never exists long or healthily and never ever enters new lands apart from its Sangha, its third jewel, its monastic community. I wanted to dedicate myself on behalf of Buddhism in the West to the development of an American community of nuns and monks. And what better way than to be one? My ordination as a bhikkhu, a fully ordained monk, was at 7 a.m. the next day. Many people had mentioned that this timing was auspicious. It was a full moon day, it was Sidigu Siero's birthday, and it would be the first ordination held in the newly built magnificent 600-seat conference center, which would also now serve as an ordination hall at Sidigu International Buddhist Academy, designed on the model of the famous Sanchi Stupa in India. Full ordination involves acceptance into a Sangha consisting of at least 5 monks. It's an act of the Sangha, meaning, as the Buddha instructed, that all of the monks present must concur. If even one objects, the ordination cannot proceed. After examination of qualifications, including a check of 8 requisites, 3 robes, bowl, razor, etc., and then instruction in the basic parameters of one's vows, one's instructor, who, in fact, does most of the talking during the ceremony, presents the candidate to the preceptor and to the Sangha. The new bhikkhu will take on a set of 227 vows, though only the first four, those whose violation can get you kicked out of the Sangha for good, are explicitly mentioned in the ceremony. In my ordination, Sitagusero acted as preceptor. Ashin Ariyadhamma acted as instructor. A group of almost 100 monks, including most of the students at SIBA, acted as Sangha, and the new novice, Chintita, acted as candidate. Ashin Mahosada Pandita, the venerable leader of our pilgrimage group from America, sat in a prominent position at the front of the hall with Sitagusero. Also, about 30 lay people were present, including all of the Americans and the Burmese in the pilgrimage group with which I had traveled around Myanmar. My ordination occurred immediately before Sitagusero's birthday celebration, which began with the offerings to the 1,000 monks and the 1,000 nuns. Since I was clearly the monk with the latest ordination date, I was prepared to fall into obscurity at the end of the line of monks. Seniority would determine queue order. When I emerged from the convocation center, great crowds of people had gathered, some of whom were gesturing to this gentle white giant as if to say, "Go to the front of the line, go to the front of the line." Suspecting a jest, I gestured back as if to say, "Don't you know who I am? I'm the most junior monk in the whole world." And they gestured back as if to say, "Our custom is that when a group offering occurs right after an ordination, the ordainee is given the privilege of going to the head of the line, ahead of even the most senior monks." And so I proceeded, awkwardly carrying my alms bowl, the use of the strap of which was obscure to me, wearing new sandals given to me for the occasion and already chafing my feet, ill-fitting in my shiny new robes, which were beginning to slip and drag on the ground with no free hand to adjust them, and at the very head of 1,000 monks followed by 1,000 nuns, all the while still wondering if I was in the right position in line at all. I managed to snake through the endless lines of gift donors and to make it back to my room, followed by two kapiyas needed to tote my haul, for no one had had a chance yet to run out of soap or even out of Sitagusero clocks before I passed through. Ong Ko, with whom I had also traveled from the USA, and a couple of his friends waiting in my room, performed full prostrations to me and proceeded to sort out my offerings, particularly to count the cash donations my kapiyas had received on my behalf, about 350,000 chet, a year's wages for many Burmese. The cash donations embarrassed me, since I knew that they were not strictly permitted under the Winaya. They had become customary for monks in Myanmar, but seldom in such a substantial quantity. I would later donate this amount to a monastery for novices. I found myself also to be the proud owner of a Sitagusero clock in which Sitagusero would perpetually see the same hands as I. A monk or nun is someone who makes a bold choice, a choice that few others see clearly that they also have the freedom to make. That choice is, "This will be the shape of my life." Specifically, for the Buddhist monk or nun, it is a choice to live as a matter of vow, as if the Buddha's teachings were true. Vow is the mold that gives the clay of one's life a recognizable shape. The idea of exercising the freedom to live a life of vow seems contradictory to most people. The value of living such a life is enormous. My initial reply to the Burmese monks who had asked what felt different to me after ordination, "I know what I am," did not quite get to the heart of it. What was different after ordination was that now, for the first time, more than a few others, in fact, an entire culture, an entire nation, recognize the shape of my life. It's not so much that I know who I am. I had chosen to be it years before as a Zen priest at the beginning of the good thinking process that would earn me my name, but that others now also know who I am. And not only that, but through their respect for the robes show that they fully endorse and share my faith in this way of life. My gratitude for being held by this kind of steadfast support was and is to this very day boundless. Thank you.